Midweek Wednesday, September 4th, in the books, we chatted with Scott Wilson from the Connecticut Citizens Defense League about a brief that the CCDL's attorney filed in connection with a pending Supreme Court case. We also got information from a state scientist regarding possible mosquito-borne illnesses after trapping found the triple E virus in the valley. And we also talked about smart approaches to marijuana and the commercialization of the pot that may end up on Connecticut streets.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And for that, we thank you. 307, 7 past 3 o'clock, 203-333-9422. That's a number always you can use to get to us here at Connecticut Today, Monday through Friday from 2 to 6. Paul Pacelli here, Aaron Johnson on the other side of the glass, and we welcome back to Connecticut Today for a segment with us, Scott Wilson, head of the CCDL, the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, the premier gun rights organization in the state. Scott, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on today, Paul.
Yeah, Scott, I wanted to have you on because late yesterday I saw that word broke that you guys and your representative attorney have helped file a friend of the court brief. It's known as an amicus brief regarding a case that's going on centered on gun rights. Talk a little about that.
Sure. This is a case that essentially was filed by survivors of victims from the Sandy Hook massacre that occurred back in 2012. And essentially, we have federal laws that protect firearms manufacturers for third-party misuse of firearms. It's been the law of the land since 2005 when firearms manufacturers were attempted to be sued out of business by numerous plaintiffs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, and what Connecticut attorneys are doing is they are attempting to sort of do an end around to Connecticut's CUTPA, which is Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices law that's in effect here that affects businesses in the state of Connecticut. So essentially, the allegation and the claims are that somehow there was a negligent entrustment claim by Bushmaster Firearms, Remington Arms, based on their advertising practices that somehow appealed to people to commit violent acts.
Mm-hmm. Somebody might hear this, Scott. They may hear you and say, well, okay, that's all fine and good. You can argue that it doesn't affect legal, law-abiding gun owners in the state. So what are you guys worried about? What would be your response to that, Scott, if somebody says that to you? Or maybe they have said that all to you right away. They'd say, well, what's your interest in this?
Well, I mean, it does affect gun owners. It affects future gun owners. It affects anybody that may want to buy a firearm in the mm-hmm. future if, very simply, there can be an end around to this Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act to where the claim can be made that firearms manufacturers are still somehow in any other way responsible for the acts, the murderous acts committed by individuals to kill and harm innocent people. To put the burden of that back on the firearms manufacturers would lead to the death of the Second Amendment by very simply manufacturers could just be sued out of business.
It also made news yesterday, Scott, actually early yesterday, and we talked about it here on the show, that this gunman, this crazed lunatic who was fired, I guess, right before he started shooting people in Texas, the guy had attempted, right, to buy a firearm using a background check, and the background check system we have in place actually snared the guy. It denied him, correct?
That's correct. And not only that, this person had the murder in this instance not only attempted the purchase, but had also reported himself to the FBI on numerous occasions and written them numerous diatribes about different things to where flags should have gone up then. If at any time the FBI was looking for somebody that was on the on the zone in that type of spectrum to create some kind of harm on a mass scale, this is somebody that really very easily probably could have been picked up and committed and at least observed further determination of their mental health beyond that point.
Scott Wilson is the guest for a few more minutes, head of the Connecticut Citizens Defense League, CCDL. Scott, we also, I understand that there's an event coming up. I believe it's this Saturday, correct? The 7th that some folks may want to be interested in. Talk about that.
Sure. Well, there's actually two events.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
One, I'm not sure if there's tickets left, so we have not been pushing it too hard, but there may be still some free tickets left on our website at ccdl.us for an event at University of New Haven. We have Maj Tor, who is an urban gun rights activist who's going to be speaking to students at University of New Haven, this coming Friday night, starting at 6 p.m. That's a free event, and to add into that, we carried over and are working co-sponsoring an event with the Libertarian Party of Connecticut to bring him back the next day to speak at a rally at the Capitol where, you know, he's going to share his message about gun rights in urban communities, which I think the folks in Hartford and Bridgeport and New Haven would be wise to come and listen to. But we're also responding to Senator Blumenthal, Governor Lamont. I almost said Governor Malloy.
That's okay. That's all right. I still do it, Scott. It's okay.
Right. So in essence, they recently had a rally / press event calling for the rest of the nation to follow Connecticut-style gun control laws, and that Connecticut was leading the way. And we want to go out very simply and warn our fellow Americans, our fellow citizens, those who hold dear the Second Amendment, to not take their advice, to very simply resist what they are the claims that they're making, that society will be safer. Because if we have Connecticut-style gun controls measures passed nationwide, we will never have an opportunity to regain the rights that are lost.
What did you think, Scott? Finally, what did you think of what Walmart did or is doing? No more, essentially, the standard long gun ammunition, the .223, the .556. They're a major retailer, Scott. 20% of all ammo here in the country is sold by Walmart. What did you think of that announcement?
Well, I think that it is certainly their prerogative to sell and not sell, you know, whatever Walmart chooses. I think that, you know, by doing so, they most certainly will lose some business. And if that's something that they feel is an acceptable, you know, loss to them, then, you know, they're free to do that. You know, very simply, you know, I know myself and I know others who do go to Walmart now will look for other options to make purchases from. A lot of times, you know, when I do go to Walmart to pick up, you know, anything, any household items or whatever else, mm-hmm. I oftentimes do stop back at that ammunition counter and pick up ammunition. You know, since that, or at least some of the calibers that I prefer, will not be available, I'll just seek my purchases elsewhere.
And without giving out any names for, you know, free spots or anything, I assume that you would say, Scott, that local gun stores here in Connecticut will probably see an uptick in business maybe because of that?
Most certainly. Yeah, I think if people are limited in their ammunition choices from a major supplier like Walmart, they will go to their local gun shops and pass that business along to them, which will be good for Connecticut local businesses. No doubt about it.
Scott Wilson, head of the CCDL, the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. Scott at ccdl.us online, correct?
That is correct, Paul.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate the time. As always, my friend, be good.
Be well. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye. CCDL, the Connecticut Citizens Defense League. So there you go. That is the main gun rights organization here in the state. To matters other now, to the environment, a mosquito trapped in Shelton, infected with the Eastern Equine Encephalitis virus. What does that mean? Joining us right now is Philip Armstrong, research scientist and director of the Mosquito Surveillance Program in New Haven at the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station. Philip, thanks for joining us. How are you?
Oh, thank you for having me.
Well, we want to have you. Thanks for coming on. We know you're busy, but it's important now. We're getting into that late summer, early fall thing with mosquitoes. Triple E, Philip, the Eastern Equine Encephalitis virus. What is it? Where did you find it? And are you surprised?
So Eastern equine encephalitis virus is a rare but serious disease in people. Nationally, there are about 6 human cases per year, but that can fluctuate quite a bit depending on whether it's an outbreak year or not. And this year, we're seeing increased activity for Triple E virus, not just here in Connecticut, but regionally in Massachusetts and Rhode Island as well. This is something that is very unpredictable. There are some years where we don't detect any virus, but if the conditions are right, like it is this year, we will see increased risk in the environment.
Philip, when you say 6 cases a year, maybe, is that just in Connecticut or is that nationally?
No, that's nationally.
Wow.
So it is very rare, but it's serious. About a third of cases of Triple E virus are fatal, and about half of the survivors suffer from lifelong disability after the infection.
Is it rare because, or are those cases so small because it is so rare, and then coupled with having to have a mosquito bite someone with it, and the development of the disease? Do you really need the perfect storm here to contract it as a human?
Yeah, so there are a couple things going on with that. Triple E virus, unlike West Nile virus, is found in more rural areas, so there's fewer people and less opportunity for exposure to the virus. Not everybody necessarily that gets infected with the virus will develop severe disease. The severe cases that get reported to the state are usually the tip of the iceberg. These are the cases that require hospitalization and not necessarily reflective of what everyone would experience after infection.
Research scientist and director of the Mosquito Surveillance Program, Philip Armstrong, is the guest from the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven. Philip, the fact that it's called Eastern Equine Encephalitis, does this have an origin in horses?
Yeah, so it was first discovered in horses. There were major equine outbreaks in the 1930s when the virus was first discovered. And we are having a number of horse cases this year as well here in the state of Connecticut and the surrounding area as well. But it also causes human disease and is, like I said earlier, is can be very severe.
So does it survive, Philip, because there are a number of horse hosts in it where it's always going to be there? It doesn't just die. It won't just die out. Am I getting that or not?
So the way it's maintained in nature, the virus is maintained in a mosquito-bird transmission cycle.
Oh.
The birds serve as the host for the mosquitoes and infect those mosquitoes with the virus. Then if a bird feeds on a viremic bird and then feeds on a horse or a human, that's how they contract the disease.
Wow, so it really is the circle of life.
Yeah, it really is. It's really part of the environment. And this virus has been with us. We've known about it for a long time, but when the conditions are right, like it is this year, it's been a very wet year. There's been a lot of mosquitoes in the environment, and that's contributing to the increased transmission that we're seeing this year.
And how do you go about this? This has always fascinated me, Philip, and I did see some pictures on and off of how this is done, but describe how you trap mosquitoes and how many of them you have to trap, and then physically, how do you check them? That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, so it's a program that's been in existence actually for 20 years here in Connecticut. So we have a network of 92 trap sites throughout the state. The traps are run overnight. Mosquitoes are brought back to our labs here in New Haven, and they're identified. The mosquitoes are identified to the species level. There's some 50 different mosquito species that have been identified here in the state. We have to identify them, and then each mosquito sample is then tested for viral infection. And so this process takes several days to complete, but it gives us sort of advanced warning of the risk to human infection, and it allows us to monitor what's happening in the environment before humans can contract the disease.
Now, are those spots where you monitor the mosquito population around the state, Philip, are those static spots, or do you folks try and rotate them out every season?
So we have static sites, but we have very good coverage throughout the entire state of Connecticut. The sites vary depending on location, but we allows us to really compare our data to sort of long-term historical averages. So we like to keep things consistent from year to year. What we're seeing this year with Triple E virus is that there's a lot of virus activity primarily focused along that Connecticut-Rhode Island border, and that's been a historical hotspot for the virus in years past as well.
Interesting. Never knew that. Philip, finally, what are the usual cautions for folks, not just because of Triple E, but West Nile and just general mosquito safety here, as now we getting the earlier sunsets, a little damper outside, a little cooler. What do you advise for folks to do and not to do regarding mosquito safety?
So for mosquito-borne diseases, this is the period of peak risk. It's late summer, early fall, not just for Triple E virus, but West Nile virus. And there's a lot you can do to reduce your risk. You want to minimize your time spent outdoors between dusk and dawn. But when you have to be outdoors at that time, when mosquitoes are biting, you want to cover up, wear long-sleeve pants and shirts, wear a mosquito repellent. Also, around the home, you just want to make sure that your windows and screens are in good repair to keep the mosquitoes out of the house. And that will go a long way to reducing your risk.
Do those electronic bug zappers work? Are they worth it? Because I have read, Philip, that, yeah, they might work, but they can also attract too many mosquitoes. What are your feelings on those?
My feelings are they don't work very well at all. They may make you feel good because you see a lot of dead mosquitoes, but
and the zapping is pretty cool too.
Pretty cool, and I get that satisfaction. But in terms of really reducing the risk, they really haven't been proven to work over the long haul. And the best things you can do is like the things I said: repellent, covering up. Reducing your time outdoors when they're biting.
Thanks so much, Philip Armstrong, research scientist, director of the Mosquito Surveillance Program at the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven. Philip, good to talk to you. Hopefully we'll hook up down the line. Thank you.
Thank you. My pleasure.
There you go. Well, folks, there you go. Mosquito safety out there. That Triple E. Wow, six cases a year in the country of Triple E. Man. Ah, darn it. Those mosquito zappers are so cool, though. When a bug goes, you know, they fly in and you go, don't do it. Damn. Another one of my childhood myths just blown to pieces. Traffic and weather together, 416 right here on Connecticut Today for a Wednesday.
Listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
And be careful out there. As Ryan just said, severe thunderstorm watch in effect till about 9 p.m. tonight. So careful out there. Right now I'm watching the radar. We do have a lot of those severe storms pretty much in the northern part of the state, Northwest Hills, Fairfield County, not too bad now. So do be advised if you are heading out. All right. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Again, we will update you as soon as we have further information on an additional arrest, a rearrest today, as we said, of the estranged husband of Jennifer Doulos, Fotis Doulos, who was rearrested today. Still no word as to what the actual charge might be there. So we will let you know if and when we get that info before we wave goodbye this evening. 203-333-9422. We're going to talk about marijuana here. You remember last week there was an appearance by most prominently the Surgeon General of the U.S. warning about the obvious dangers of smoking marijuana for women if they were pregnant or nursing, and the fact that the potency of the marijuana we're seeing now is quite a bit more potent than than moms or grandmas, if you can, you know, picture mom or grandma smoking, which, you know, maybe. Dr. Kevin Sabet joins us. He's the president of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He was a former senior drug policy advisor to President Barack Obama, one of the nation's foremost experts on the impact of commercialized marijuana. And that's the key word. Doctor, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Commercialized marijuana. Yeah. Is that what we're talking about here? This is not the stuff that you know, the guy's growing next to you in the dorm room.
No, this isn't dorm room weed anymore. It's actually GMO the bread. Yeah, for real. I mean, I'm telling you, the additives, the things they put in it mm-hmm. to make it a lot more stronger than it used to be. You know, Woodstock weed was 4%. 80s, 90s weed in the dorm rooms were probably 5 to 6%. And today we're talking 99% as high as that in these concentrates. And anyone who doesn't believe me should go to Colorado and see how easy it is for anyone to get 99% THC marijuana. It's not just a plant. It's a lot more than that. And, you know, I'm not saying we should be putting people in prison or, mm-hmm. you know, giving someone a criminal record for making a stupid mistake when they're 16 or 17. But I also think that this idea of commercialized, normalized marijuana is very problematic.
And as you mentioned, Doctor, a lot of the folks who are going to be making the decisions on this, including people here in Connecticut up in our General Assembly right now, as you probably know, we're debating that here. A lot of these people, right, are the people about my age, a little older, a little younger, who may have partaken in the, you know, the dorm room, the Woodstock marijuana. And I doubt whether, and I know you folks have been trying to do this vocally, but I doubt whether they actually have a grasp on how potent the pot is today.
Well, yeah, they don't. I mean, because unfortunately there's a massive industry that is all about propaganda and saying that it's medicine for every kind of use, even though, you know, yes, in limited circumstances, there are medical components, but not everything is medicine. That's like saying, you know, I'm going to take two shots of whiskey. That's medicine, too. It makes me feel better, right? Doesn't make sense to say that. And then you have a propaganda machine by the marijuana folks, and these folks just want to make money. They're ignoring the mental health literature, the literature on learning and IQ, cognition, the developing brain. It's no wonder every major medical association agrees with what we're saying and with the Surgeon General as well, who essentially we need to slow this train down. And thankfully in Connecticut, unfortunately not your governor, but thankfully the assembly has heeded those calls and legalization was stopped last year. We have a group in Connecticut called SAM Connecticut that worked very hard on that. So we're going to continue going on that.
Yeah, and we should tell folks, SAM is Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Your little sub-headline there describing the group, Preventing Another Big Tobacco. What do you mean by that, Dr. Sabet?
Well, what I mean is that marijuana is turning into a massive industry. It's not about Cheech and Chong movies anymore. It's about, you know, Philip Morris and Altria, which are the, you know, some of the biggest tobacco companies in the world, Imperial Tobacco Brands, Constellation, which is actually an alcohol brand. These are the companies getting involved in pot. And so, again, you know, the baby boomers think of this as hippies, and it's not hippies. It's people in suits who are out there doing this, these major companies, these investors, Wall Street, and it's about making money for them, and I'm really worried about that.
I have friends of mine who are pro legal pot, you know, recreational pot, and I've discussed this stuff with them.
Yeah.
And the line I always hear, Doctor, is something akin to, quote, well, this is just big pharma trying to put the kibosh on natural remedies. What's your response to
that? Well, I'm still waiting for the checks from big pharma, because I'll be waiting by the mailbox for a long time, I think, because we don't get a penny from big pharma. If anything, pharma is taking over this industry. The former head of Purdue Pharma, which yeah. produced OxyContin, the mm-hmm. deadly opioid that killed so many people, that former head of it started a marijuana company. He left Purdue to start a pot company. So, you know, this idea that it's pharma is pretty ridiculous. They actually are trying to pharmaceuticalize marijuana as well, which is, I think, a separate conversation
yeah.
we can have. But the point is, they're not the ones stopping this. The ones trying to stop this are moms, dads, PTAs, people who really care about our community. So I don't think anybody would say with a straight face that more marijuana is good for their neighborhood. I've never heard a person looking for a house that tells a realtor, you know, I'd like to buy a house near a pot shop. Or we want to make sure there's a lot of stoned people outside.
Yeah, but you know what, Doctor? If you and I want to open like a Domino's Pizza, that's not a bad idea. You know,
it may not be, although I don't know. I, I don't think marijuana motivates you to do anything, let alone, you know, to remember what kind of pizza you like.
Well,
you know,
it's interesting. I love the people who say, and I just say this tongue in cheek, but you probably heard it too. You know, I'm more creative when I'm high, or the colors are more vivid. I say, no, you're stoned. That's the problem right here. It has nothing to do with creativity.
No, it doesn't. And actually, a lot of artists who used to say that actually have recanted that and said, you know what, it actually hurts. If you look at some of these pop stars like Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber and other people who used to glorify marijuana, mm-hmm. they now talk about, you know, how actually they're not using it and they're much more creative and much better people now. So, you know, drugs, obviously, they alter consciousness, and I'm not saying that everybody who uses marijuana will be addicted to it or mm-hmm. go to use heroin, just like everybody who smokes cigarettes won't get lung cancer.
Yeah.
In fact, the vast majority don't get lung cancer, but we don't say, well, since the majority don't get lung cancer, we should all smoke, right? It's the same thing with marijuana. Even though the vast majority won't have these problems, it's not a reason to encourage it in society, which is exactly what this industry is trying to do.
And, doctor, one of the things that often gets kind of, you know, shoved aside here in the discussion is edibles, the whole mm-hmm. marijuana edible thing. When people hear the word edible, mm-hmm. what should they think?
Well, these are foods, usually candies, cookies, ice cream, sodas. They are often the actual candy, like a gummy bear you'd get at a movie theater. Mm-hmm. And then they're basically sprayed on marijuana concentrate, marijuana oil on it. Often, by the way, you have no idea what's in these things, even in the legal states. I mean, it's, you know, this illusion that if we legalize it, we regulate it and we know what's in it is actually false. We don't really know what's in it at all. And so the edibles often have these sprayed things in them or on them. And they're sending more kids and, frankly, more adults to the hospital these days than ever before because it takes about 20 minutes to digest and mm-hmm. actually feel the effects. People think of it as like when you're smoking a joint, it should go straight to your brain. You feel it immediately. There's such a delayed feeling with edibles that it makes them even more dangerous, I think.
We had that, I don't know, you remembered offhand, but there was that young man, that college student, I think, from Africa in Denver, right, a couple of years ago. He ate a whole, like a pub-sized cookie.
Yeah.
When they told him, have like 1/5 of it and wait, and the poor kid hallucinated and he jumped off a railing at a hotel.
Yeah, it was a tragedy, and there's been other tragedies as well. I mean, you know, because of the way it's affecting. I mean, even Maureen Dowd, the liberal New York Times columnist, wrote a column a few years ago about her trip to Denver to a hotel room,
yes.
eating a whole chocolate bar and saying, I thought I was going to die. I mean, yeah. she said that, someone who had used marijuana in the past.
Mm-hmm.
In my book, which is called Reefer Sanity, I talk about a guy who used to head up a normal chapter, which is a pro-marijuana group in the 70s, who basically stopped using after the 70s and took it up again in the mid-2000s after a friend's urging and tried a pot muffin. And he said that you know, he basically felt like he was out of his mind and he would never touch it again. He could not believe the difference in potency from now you know, versus in the 70s. So these things are quite dangerous. The other really dangerous thing are the vaporizers. More and more kids are getting their hands on these vapes, and they often have THC oil, THC cartridges, and they are deadly now, we see, around the country.
You know, you mentioned your book, Reefer Sanity. Forgive me, I neglected to mention at the early going. And you probably hear this from people who, you know, talk to you or read the book or same people I deal with. Well, this is just reefer madness all over again. You just, that crazy. Now, granted, that movie was a little over the top, but,
sure.
you know, the accusations on that come from everywhere.
Well, they do. And again, it's like we can't even talk about this in a calm way without people saying reefer madness. And again, I say don't take my word for it. Listen to the National Academy of Sciences, who published a 400-plus page report 2 years ago, looked at over 10,000 human studies on marijuana that have been conducted in the last 20 years and came to the same conclusions I'm coming to. Talk to the major medical associations, the AMA, the American Academy of Pediatrics, on and on and on. People don't need to take my word for it. They should see what the scientific community says.
Yeah, the president of the state medical society doctor I had on here a couple of months ago, and she said she's a GI doctor, a gastrointestinal doctor, and she said she is starting to see, and you probably heard of this, a condition among young smokers where they can't keep anything down. Their lower GI tract essentially starts to twitch and spasm, and the only thing that will stop this are repeated hot hot showers that will allow the body to react. And it's interesting, I asked her if she confronted any of her young patients on marijuana. And when she did, and the ones that admitted it, never went back to see her the second time.
Yeah, it's cannabis hypermesis syndrome.
Yes.
And it's a terrible thing of uncontrollable vomiting that we're seeing. We're seeing all these new strange illnesses, frankly, with the new strange marijuana. I mean, these vaping illnesses, these vomiting illnesses. We're seeing more psychosis, basically extreme panic attacks that are leading people to, you know, have delusions. I mean, all these things we never really saw before, and now we're seeing them.
Finally, doctor, is the answer to this, if you or I were to sit back here and say, well, okay, the monster's not going away, but is the answer to this maybe the regulation of marijuana to a lower level, say when I was in college 30 years ago, or, you know, when you were in college, back to maybe the very mild strains? Do we offer, I don't know, in lack of a better term, a low alcohol or low potency strain to make everybody happy or not?
You know, that wouldn't make people happy, unfortunately. You know, the heavy users and the majority of heavy use is actually done by these high-potency things, and so it's not going to make anybody happy, including the industry. They make their money from heavy users. They make their money from the high-potency stuff. I think we're going to have to see what happens. I don't want to criminalize people, as I said.
No.
But I think we can come up to a compromise where we don't criminalize people if they want to, you know, whatever, find it somewhere in a low potency, but we also don't want to commercialize this, because I think when you open the Pandora's box and you say, well, we'll let the industry do, you know, a low proof thing. They already have lobbyists in every state capital and in Washington. They're gonna fight that a year or two later. I have some very well-meaning people saying, well, to prevent big marijuana, let's not put it in the hands of corporations. Let's have the state grow marijuana. The state sells it. They put warning labels, and they don't. You know, it goes to the roads and playgrounds and schools, and it doesn't go to corporations. The problem there is we're gonna have the marijuana industry fight that as well, and reverse that, just like they've reversed that for alcohol in many states that it used to have state-owned liquor. So I just don't see how that compromise with the industry is really an option. They are out there to make money, and you only make money in this industry by encouraging people to use your product a lot.
And look at how many mutual funds now in Wall Street, they're telling clients, retirement people, well, you know, you may want to have some marijuana funds in that 401k, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
I mean, that's pretty amazing.
By the way, as we close here, just to let you know that looking at your book here on Amazon, you know what's right next to it, to the right side of it, as I look at it right here? DVD of Reefer Madness.
Yeah, so, there you go.
There you go. The guest has been Dr. Kevin Sabat, president of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. Checking out Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He is a former senior drug policy advisor to President Barack Obama, and his book is called Reefer Sanity, 7 Great Myths About Marijuana. Doctor, thanks for the time today. We appreciate it.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you. There it is, folks. Reefer Sanity, 7 Great Myths About Marijuana. And I have friends of mine who say, well, are you doing another anti-marijuana thing on your show? No, it's not anti-marijuana. It's pro-understanding what kind of Pandora's box you may open up here. Right? Booze is booze. All right? Booze is booze. You know, we know, for example, something that's 80 proof or 100 proof is stronger than something that's 10 or 15 proof. All right? We know that vodka is stronger than beer. How many people understand or don't understand the potency of some of this commercialized pot? Just the way that there's a certain potency of nicotine in cigarettes to get people hooked. Any thoughts? You want to tell me to shut up and go get high? That's fine. And apparently the Connecticut Post, our fine friends of the Connecticut Post, Brian Lockhart and company, have a great slideshow. I figure we should wind up the first half of the show on this. Back away from death and destruction here for a moment. The new food you can get at the Big E this year. Now, if you folks have been listening to this show for any amount of time, you know that Aaron Johnson's the foodie here. He's the guy on the other side of the glass. I'm a really boring guy. You know, a cheese sandwich and water is usually, that's enough for me. because I've had a constant battle with my weight. So it's like, you know, a lot of the stuff that looks really good, it's like, why even bother? Because I'm going to eat three times what I should eat, and that's bad. Now, Aaron, on the other hand, is still a physically fit young man who often samples local cuisine to excess, which is good. But he doesn't forget the days that he used to have salad dressing sandwiches while he was at Southern Connecticut State University there. You don't forget those days, do you?
No, you can never forget those days. Those are the days that lay the groundwork for who you become.
Yes, you got to remember, you got to be humble, right, where you come from. Well, how about this? New Big E food. Chicken, bacon, and cheese chompers with buffalo ranch dipping sauce. Yes or no?
That's right up my alley. Like, right. That was the first one I saw when I first...
Is that a strike? If you're bowling, that's right in the pocket.
That's right down the middle. That's about 96 right down the plate.
Really?
Right there.
That's a 7-10 split. You can hit
seven, right there. Mwah.
Chicken,
beautiful.
Bacon, and cheese chompers with buffalo ranch dipping sauce. All right, so that's a... Then we have cheeseburger, chowder, and oysters. Mm.
See, I'm not a big oyster guy.
No, I'm not. No, no, no.
So, I mean, it's fried, so I might give it a chance. But.
See, know that you're at the age where you can still enjoy that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Give yourself 20 years before you go to the doctors and say, hey, Mr. Johnson, your cholesterol up a little bit. Yeah, get out of here. All right, cheeseburger chowder. So I guess they must just grind up cheeseburgers and throw it in the chowder? All right, I don't know. Deep-fried pineapple upside-down cake.
See, again, we're back with the fried stuff. I mean, and I also remember saying before, I'm not a big dessert guy.
Okay.
You know, I can have it, but, yeah.
So you're not a sweets guy?
No.
Really?
Not at all, no.
Not at all, huh?
Cheesecake is about as good as I can
that's
go.
That's it, huh?
But that's, yeah, no, I can't do a lot of sweets.
Okay, what else do we have here? Well, cream puffs they have. That's a cream puff. Now, barbecue split here. Mashed potato, pulled pork, and a beef brisket topped with two St. Louis ribs, cherry tomatoes, and a drizzle of barbecue sauce. Now, I could give that a shot.
See, that's something I try, and I go straight into bed. Like, you eat it, and you just go straight to sleep. Right?
Really?
Afterwards.
Yeah. Flavored frozen. But see, flavored frozen hot chocolate, that's your millennial generation right there. They go all over that. Vodka drink, the heck with that. Homemade spanakopita. I have no idea what that is.
Still going to eat it. I'm looking at the picture right now. I'm still going to eat it. I'm still going to try it.
Homemade falafel. Okay, that's good. We can do that. Homemade hummus. I'm a hummus. I can do. Do you do hummus?
Oh, I love hummus.
Yeah?
Absolutely. There isn't much I don't like. Let's just put it that way. I'm not the most picky eater in the world.
Okay, then we go back to 2018. Captain Nemo's golf ball sized tater tot kebabs. Oh, God. Captain Nemo's golf ball sized keg kebabs. Oh, there you go. Wow. Look at the messy Magnus. Commonwealth Avenue, that's my old neighborhood, BU. A beer-braised pulled pork sandwich with I don't know about this. You got a pulled pork sandwich, beer-braised pulled pork, right? Between an apple fritter?
But you think about it, like when people put like sandwiches, like think of like the McGriddle or something like that, where it's pancake or the waffle between.
No, see, because it's not bread.
No, but it's sweet. It's that sweet savory.
Sweet and salty. Yeah, well, that's another big fad, the sweet and salty thing.
Yeah, it's actually not bad. I didn't agree with it at first, but I've been to a couple pretty decent like chicken and waffle joints down in Greensboro when my brothers went to college.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good.
It was okay.
They made me a believer.
So you pulled your taste buds kicking and screaming into that.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
okay. There you go. Now
then everyone left satisfied. So
that's
it. That's all important.
You're right if you just got that smile on your face. All right, 356, traffic and weather together. So basically, Aaron has just said that he likes pretty much anything that's fried, nothing that I can eat because then my doctor goes,